Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station. Hello, and welcome to Dig This Environmental Watch. I am Pamela Spoto, host of this show. In the studio today, I'm joined by Craig Boyer, MSW, meaning a Master's of Social Work, Randy Compton, longtime resident of Round Mountain and researcher on climate change, and he has experience working in the logging industry. In addition, Randy Compton has lived in the Round Mountain area all of his life, and being the keen observer he is, can detail the changes in the land and the forests. Hello, Craig and Randy.
Hello good there, morning. Pamela.
So we're going to have a good show today. And our topic today is the top environmental issues that we are facing. Obviously, we won't be discussing all of these issues because there are many of them. And if I'm saying you, the audience, if you search out the top five, let's say, of these issues, you will find slightly different issues in the many different articles, but many of them are the same or related. So if you Google, okay, five top issues, environmental issues, they will have categories and lists of issues, but they are very closely related. And what is particularly pertinent is the realization that these issues are intertwined. And so I'm going to read a list of current environmental issues. Then I will mention a few points about the Bonn Climate Change Conference that took place November 6th through the 17th in Bonn, Germany. Following that, Randy Compton will tell us a bit about his research, or a lot about his research, concerning climate change. We will talk about some individual environmental issues we face, and hopefully Greg Boyer will describe what he believes is the most pertinent issue we are facing. We will discuss these issues together, and I will be referring to an article titled, What? Me Worry? Humans Are Blind to Imminent Environmental Collapse. And the subtitle is, Accelerating Biodiversity Loss May Turn Out to Be the Sleeper Issue of the Century by William E. Rees, published on November 16th, 2017. And I found a link to this article when I was on the Facebook page of the UN Climate Change Conference, also called the COP23. And finally, we will be discussing a few things that we as humans can do to mitigate the dire situation we find ourselves in. And before we started the show this morning, and I was talking to Randy and Craig, and I said, we are not scientists here, but that is not the point. The point is that we are informed citizens. We are educated and informed citizens. And I would encourage, everyone to become more informed and educated to find out what is really happening and what we can do. So that, I think, is very important. So I'm going to read this list of top environmental issues and concerns, and I have about 20 of them here. But depending, once again, on how you categorize these, most of these could fall under climate change or an aspect of climate contributing to climate change today. So the first one I have listed is climate change, then big ag, agriculture, factory farms, population growth, genetically modified organisms, pollution, air, water, and soil, natural resource depletion, which includes deforestation, overfishing, aquifer contamination, loss of biodiversity, species extinction, and in some categories, the list would have deforestation by itself, not as a sublist of natural resource depletion, because deforestation is a really significant, important issue. Ocean acidification, overfishing. Now, and I don't know a lot about the phosphorus-nitrogen cycle, but I do know that this has to be in balance. And when it gets out of balance, we have problems. And when chemical fertilizers are used in factory farms, for example, or feed for factory animals, this can change the nitrogen cycle. Another major issue, it would be pesticides and herbicides in the sense that we are poisoning ourselves. Dirty energy consumption, such as coal, oil and gas, nuclear power, And it's not that nuclear power itself is dirty energy. It's the waste. It's the produced water. It's contaminated. And what do you do with that? And it's so dangerous. And I'm not sure that most people know, but the Pentagon is the largest polluter in the world. If you think about just some of the chemicals and products that it has used besides the weaponry, is that there's Agent Orange, depleted uranium. Burn pits is a huge issue right now. I've had students who were around burn pits, and these are highly contaminated burning. I mean, it's like this huge hole in the earth, and everything is put in there, from tires to batteries to weapons to refrigerators, whatever. It's just and plastics, and so all of this, when it's burned, creates this atmosphere, this air that is toxic, and not only for the military people, but for the people that would live anywhere near that. And then, of course, there's overconsumption. So before we continue on here and talk a little bit about the Bonn Germany conference, is there anything that either one of you want to say about this list, or should we just come back to it?
Well, I'd like to say about the population growth. Now, that creates the staggering consumption of natural resources. And if you didn't have the population growing and growing to the level that we simply can't sustain, we wouldn't have a lot of this climate change and all the destruction that we're dealing with. And it's a big issue because there's a lot of religious barriers to controlling our populations.
Yes.
We're not like China, where they can say, okay, you can only have one or two children. And so I think of the little ditty that Pete Seeger did. The pill, I'm pining for the pill. I won't have any more because they're going to bless the pill. I went to the priest and said, what are you doing? He said, you've got those evil, sinful tricks. You've been married 7 years and you only got the six. Ah, the pill. The pill, I'm pining for the pill. And that's what I see is something that's really got to happen, or we are not going to get a handle on this.
Well, don't you know you shouldn't have sex unless you want to just say no?
Unless you want to have children.
Unless you want to have children, yes, yes. That's what some of the major religions say. But it really is, in a way, insane that birth control is very much controlled. And I'm not going to get into abortion at this point, but birth control. And it's just, I don't quite understand that. And China is really correct. When you have over, what, a billion of population, they're very wise. Well, what are we going to do here? We just can't have another billion, another 500 million. So we're going to control our population. And part of that is, I think you have to pay higher taxes and have fees and penalties if you do have another child. That's rather right. Than the number that you are allotted. And I wonder how Americans would. I mean, I've asked students in classes about that. You know, why not just have one child or two children? That what do you need seven for or ten for? Well, that's my right.
And there's plenty that need adoption as well.
Yes, people can adopt.
You know, aside from population, there's a huge problem in our planet. Is we've grown from a time where indigenous people knew fully well that we are all just a product of the biosphere, and that we had to manage life in order to survive for the next generations. In our industrialized society now, there's somehow this idea that our planet is like a giant smorgasbord. We just help ourselves to what we want. We throw away what we don't want, and we just pig out, and that's our right. We're entitled to it. And not only that, but we're going to get more tomorrow, you know, when we become great. So it's a whole way of looking at our biosphere and coming back to the basic fact that we are a product of our biosphere.
And I wholeheartedly agree with that. We get the message from the government, which seems to be corporate power now. Corporations and government seem to be married
totally
at the hip. So, but the message is coming out from corporations is that we need to deregulate. We don't want these regulations. You're not even called a citizen anymore. You are a consumer. And so this propaganda, this mentality has just been given over and over and over again, that you need to consume. You need to consume. We need to grow. We need to grow. And it doesn't make any sense, Randy. You're absolutely right. We have a finite planet. A finite planet, and we have infinite desires, and we're not talking about needs here, but it's the latest. I need the latest this, the latest that. The obsolescence is built into what we buy, so we have to buy more and more and more. And this is, as Randy said, this is absolutely not.
It's unsustainable.
And
you can't sustain it.
And we're not thinking seven generations into the future, or even the next generation. It's right now. I want it now.
In the last 40 years, human extraction of resources has tripled. From 1970, humans were extracting an estimated 22 billion tons of natural resources in the form of timber, minerals, etc. And by 2010, it was up to 70 billion tons. So we're eating ourselves out of a place to survive.
I know. And it's kind of surprising to me, and surprising of some of these authors of these articles that I've been reading, that we're not going, my goodness, we're on the edge of collapse. This is catastrophic. What are we going to do? And we're not discussing it. We're not discussing it in mainstream media. It's fake news now. That's what it is. Okay, well, we're going to continue this discussion, and I do want to talk more about that, because I was reading something last night, Randy, that said something like 40% of the resources, but I don't have it at my fingertips, has been used within the last, short period of time. It's not like hundreds of years.
No, it's going faster and faster and faster.
Yes.
It's been almost 20 years when they determined that humans are consuming resources 50% faster then the planet can replenish them, and we're consuming them faster all the time, and apparently it's not fast enough for the people in charge now, because they're going to want to open up, deregulate all extraction for the final extraction orgy.
The final extraction orgy.
With fracking, that's an example right there.
That is an example, and just as what Randy was saying, and also in terms of overfishing, we keep taking, and then there's nothing left. And so, and some people are going, well, why don't we have more fish? You know, why does overfishing happen? And when you have, how many miles long are some of those nets in the ocean that just gather up everything? It is just, it's not right. So I would like to talk just a little bit about the Bonn, Germany UN Climate Conference. And Fiji hosted this, by the way. And just for our listeners, because I didn't know this at first, what COP, COP, stood for, COP23. It's the Conference of Parties. So it's the UN Climate Change Conference, also called COP23. And Fiji hosted this conference, but they weren't able to have it on their little island because it just wouldn't accommodate all the participants, and for other practical reasons. But the smaller islands, this brings up another point. The smaller islands are feeling the brunt of climate change with the flooding and the ocean rising and the severe storms. And this was another suggestion. This is a suggestion from the conference that we can be talking about later, is that the rich countries who are producing all of these emissions that are producing climate change are the ones that should be paying for the little countries, or the third world countries, are not creating these emissions that we are. And so the rich countries need to stand up and take responsibility for what they've created. And I bet some people, corporations, are going, oh no, not me, I'm not paying. So this was the 23rd annual conference. And their question here is, why does it matter? And I just want to read this one paragraph. It said, climate change is already significantly increasing the likelihood of extreme weather, from heat waves to floods. But without sharp cuts to our global carbon emissions, we can expect severe, widespread, and irreversible impacts for billions of people and the national and the natural world. And I think part of the climate change conference was to reduce, you know, in terms of the temperatures, instead of having saying, okay, 2 degrees Celsius is going to be okay, to reduce it to at least 1.5 degrees Celsius or lower, from what I understand. And so I thought it was really interesting as well that the U.S. sent a panel. It's laughable if it weren't so tragic. So all of these countries are gathering here to talk about what are some solutions, what are we going to do, how can we reduce these emissions, how can we, you know, mitigate some of these terrible storms and floods and droughts that are happening. What are we going to do? And so the U.S., the Trump administration, sent executives from the coal industry, from the fossil fuel industry, and from the nuclear power industry. And it was mind-boggling as I was watching this on television, the conference in the room with this panel of corporate executives of dirty energy, somehow spouting clean coal, clean coal, clean coal. Is that oxymoronic?
It is.
Clean coal?
No.
And the people, there are cancer alleys, what are called cancer alleys, around these extraction areas for clean coal. Right. But what was so interesting, too, is that the people in the audience reacted to this panel of dirty polluters being at a climate change conference. And they held up signs. They started singing. They said, leave it in the ground. And this went on and on for some time. So I think that is a good thing.
Yes, I'm glad to hear the resistance.
So I was going to ask Randy, now that I've kind of hopefully kind of set the groundwork here, we have all of these issues. Top, in my opinion, has to do with climate change and all the contributions to climate change, and that we just had this wonderful global conference. And so, Randy, I know that you have been doing a tremendous amount of research in climate change, and our good friend, Dr. Doug Craig, has written over 2,000 blogs, maybe 2,500 blogs for our local newspaper. And you got very involved in this. You were reading all the articles. You were reading what people were responding. You were doing your own research. You were responding to the people who would like to, you know, who would like to deny that this is happening. So, Randy, can you tell us a little bit about your research on climate change?
Well, I think that Doug's blog was the thing that really forced me into educating myself about climate change, because I'm debating the topic with people who totally deny it's happening, and point after point they bring up. And so for me to substantiate my argument, I would have to go do the best research that I could do. I would collect studies from universities. I'd collect studies from science agencies, from NASA, from NOAA, collecting scientific facts and produce those scientific facts in our debate, along with links back to the source. And after, I don't know how many years that this went on, after 2,000 blogs, not one of the deniers at any one time ever substantiated their position with anything other than more nonsense. And so I had a library. I had over 46 sources at one point, and I just produced them over and over and over in the blogs and ask anybody, just pick out one of these sources, and we will chase them back and just totally scrutinize their information. Never would they take me up on that. So I educated myself in that way to climate change, and I found that you know, after all, of all the problems that we face of war, of resource depletion, biodiversity loss, all of it, there's none that is long-reaching and is catastrophic as is climate change, because we've set in course this situation where our planet is going to go through changes for centuries at this point. And every day that we contribute to that is going to add more problem to our planet. So that's what I've that's what I've grown to understand about climate change and how serious that is.
Well, Randy, could you also, because sometimes the deniers will say that the scientists don't agree, and so could you speak to that?
Well, then I would ask them which scientists do not agree, because it's all built on peer-reviewed science, and that's what it boils down to. You might find a scientist that calls themselves a scientist, and they will make some statement, and then it's picked up, and it's passed through and bounced around like a ping-pong ball, and they reference each other. But when it comes down to it, science, factual science, is built on the peer review process, and that's where a study will come. A scientist will produce a study. All the scientists, professional scientists from around the globe, get a chance to beat that apart and poke holes in it and find things wrong with it. When they can't do that anymore, the thing is past peer review, and it stands until it can be disproven. So climate science is built on the peer review process.
Yes.
And you cannot deny that fact. So instead, they like to talk about Al Gore's electric bill. They like to cite nonsense. They like to accuse you of wanting to go back and live in a cave. They go in all directions, but to the facts of peer review science.
And from the articles that I was reading in terms of the international climate scientists, and we're talking about climate scientists, global climate scientists, that is something like 97% of them agree with what you were just saying, that climate change is real. It is produced by humans.
Not only are the science in almost complete agreement on the scientific realities of climate change, but there is not a university, a major university anywhere on the globe that has not studied the science and confirmed it to be true. And I would challenge anybody to find one that has challenged the science.
Yes, and I need to remind our listening audience that this is KKRN in Bella Vista. We are community-supported radio, and we are in the Round Mountain Studios this morning. This is Dig This Environmental Watch. I'm host Pamela Spoda. We have Randy Compton and Craig Boyer in the studio, and we're talking about some of the most important climate issues of our time. And so going along with what you just said, Randy, in terms of the few deniers, let's say scientists that are climate deniers, I mean, sometimes corporations that have a certain interest in this will pay scientists, and eventually it comes out that they have paid scientists to create doubt in the public. Do you think that the few scientists or alleged scientists that deny climate change is real are basically paid by the corporations, or is there because some of these deniers, you know, like that we're responding, you know, on an everyday basis, will say, well, there's argument about this. Not everybody agrees. Well, and then they'll use one person, one name from somewhere. And I know that there's been research done that some of these major, the fossil fuel industry by itself has paid millions of dollars to create doubt. And they know that climate change is real because they have researched that.
Well, it's a game. It's a shell game with our attention, with the attention of the masses. So these so-called scientists, there's direct ties with many of them where they're being funded by the fossil fuels industry and extraction industries, but once again, you know, it's just a game, a delusion with your attention, because they totally do not address the peer-reviewed science. They spring up a topic where they say, you can't know the weather, you know, which that's right, you can't know the weather, and then they blow that up into something where it tries to undermine science, to take your attention to where you don't trust science. It's a lie. And it's a manipulation of the attention of the masses.
Yes, yes. And in this article I have here, it's called How Greed, Fear, and Our Own Biases Blind Us to the Realities of Climate Change. And one thing that the author, James Gordon, who's an MD, says here is that that several studies show that such resolute deniers are far more likely to be politically conservative, white, and older, and that twice as many are men. Researchers suggest that social dominance orientation, a tendency to conform to traditional values and to put faith in certain hierarchical structures, and also there's a religious factor involved here. And I've heard that too. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me, but it's kind of like, well, God is going to fix this.
Well, that's an easy, you know, that's another easy distraction.
Yes.
But the truth is, you've either educated yourself on this topic or you haven't. And when I asked my congressman, Doug LaMalfa, to tell me where he gets his information on climate science, he played word games. You know, just like the guys in the blogs, that's all they know how to do is play word games, because they have not taken the small time required to study the science, or they are deceiving everybody just playing word games around it.
Yes, that is true as well. And, you know, something that you said earlier, Randy, and I was going to read this short piece from this paragraph about how life, in a way, how life has evolved. It says, the author says here, it is life itself, beginning with countless species of microbes, that gradually created the environment suitable for life on Earth as we know it. Biological processes are responsible for the life-friendly chemical balance of the oceans. Photosynthetic bacteria and green plants have stocked and maintained Earth's atmosphere with the oxygen necessary for the evolution of animals. And he goes on to talk about this. And so in other words, as I was reading this, I read this several times because he goes on in a longer description of this, that what we have here, what we're living on, is this planet that has these threads that are all part of the web of life. And humans have come in, and corporations have come in, and those threads of life. I mean, we're killing wolves, we're killing bears, we're killing coyotes. We're going into natural habitats, and we're building, and we're extracting, and we're poisoning water. And so this delicate balance that has evolved over all of this time is in danger now, and it's really phenomenal that. That people just aren't engaged in tremendous discussions about this. I mean, we are right here, right now. But on mainstream media, you're not going to have this. Why, you know, I'm wondering, why can't a weatherman or weatherwoman say, look at Hurricane or whatever it is, whatever name it is, Hurricane Sandy, Katrina, whatever, and say, you know, our weather, our storms are getting more intense, and we're experiencing more floods, we're experiencing more droughts, just as the climatologists have predicted would happen. But we don't hear that.
No, I think that, according to, I don't know why either, because it seemed like anybody personally would want to know the truth about our collective situation. But still, I think that that politics and possibly a general fear about what it would really mean for people to look at the truth of our situation, it keeps people to turn the channel. You know, go watch TV, or watch a football game. You know, it's too much to think about.
And I got to thinking more about human invasion of habitats in a way, and this article that I have been reading about, he calls it competitive displacement, that humans are displacing the natural world. So, for example, he said, remember the 40 to 60 million bison that used to roam the Great Plains of North America? They, along with the millions of deer, pronghorns, wolves, and lesser beasts that once animated ecosystems, have been competitively displaced, their habitats taken over by a much greater biomass of humans, cattle, pigs, and sheep. So instead of the natural world, we have humans and what they think that they require.
Yeah, it's it's really short-sightedness to think that we can just choose the animals and the creatures that we want and to make it, because you know, just like a computer is built of so many workable components, and they all depend on the functioning of everything in a coordinated way. That's what this biosphere is. Our planet is life on Earth has been created like that. It's a functioning, like a coordinated system, like a living organism. And when you start taking pieces of it out and throwing it away, well, you're just taken away from it, and pretty quick it cannot work. And that's exactly what's going on right now. And scientists tell us that. They can pinpoint exactly where and how it is happening.
Yes. And part of what we were just talking about, when you start destroying and killing the natural species, the natural environment, and then you bring in the pigs, the cattle, the sheep, then you also have these incredible factory farms that are polluting just unbelievably the land, the oceans, and so forth. So I think what we're going to do right now is take a break, and we are going to listen to a little bit of Bob Wickline about taking our heads out of the sand. This happens to be one of my favorite songs because he talks about let need, not greed, lead the way. And we'll be right back, and this is Environmental Watch. And we're talking about climate change and some other related environmental issues.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich. How much can she take? How much can she give? How much is too much, and how much longer can she live? As we turn our backs and turn our eyes and pretend we don't see, if ignorance is bliss, then full of bliss are we. As we take, 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 like a good mother, Mother Nature keeps giving, but her heart must be ready to break. She's being abused and overused by her children who choose to ignore. There's only so much that she can give before she can give no more. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Let me not greed lead the way. We poison the air, we poison the land, and we poison the water we drink. And we're the only known creatures in the whole universe with the ability to think. But we keep on thinking, happiness lies in how much we buy and sell. And more of paradise is lost, and only time will tell what will become of Mother Nature in the coming years, when we will have about 10 billion neighbors on this sphere. Will our children's children wake up to the American dream? Or will it have become a nightmare beyond imagining? Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Let me not greed lead the way. So much and waste so much, how much do we really need? And how long can a dream survive that seems to thrive on greed? A little pollution is so thick and dark and dense, it contaminates and poisons common good and common sense. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend. Let me not greed lead the way.
Hello, and welcome back to Dig This Environmental Watch. I'm host Pamela Spoto. I'm in the studio with Randy Compton and Craig Boyer, and we're talking thus far, halfway through the show, about climate change and why it's so important that we become educated and informed about climate change. And we're going to talk a little bit, well, we ended with a lot of the natural world. I mean, there are at least, according to Tom Hartman, 200 species going extinct today. And we kill the larger animals. Like people go, oh, well, the wolves are going to eat my cattle and we're going to eradicate all the wolves. We're going to eradicate all the coyotes. We're going to eradicate whatever is in my way. But we have been encroaching in on their habitat. And so we want to talk a little bit about factory farms. But before we get there, because I think this is very interesting, Randy Compton and his wife were in Germany recently, and the climate change conference, the UN climate change conference that was held in Bonn, Germany, also called COP23, was talking a little bit about the insect population. And so who cares about insects? You know, it's like, what do we need insects for anyway? And I'm going to read a paragraph here because Randy, when he came back from Germany, he talked about this. We had dinner together and he talked about this. So I'm going to read this paragraph, and this is something that we can be thinking about. So what the article says, that this was underscored once again in October when scientists reported that flying insect populations in Germany have declined by an alarming 75%. In the past three decades, accompanied in the past dozen years by a 15% drop in bird populations. Trends are similar in other parts of Europe where data is available. Even in Canada, everything from the casual windshield surveys to formal scientific assessments show a drop in insect numbers. Meanwhile, domestic populations of many insect birds are in free fall. Ontario has lost half its whippoorwills in the past 20 years. Across the nation, such species as nighthawks, swallows, martins, flycatchers are down 75%, and other birds have plummeted. And then the author asked the questions, have you heard much about this on mainstream news? And then the answer is, too bad. Biodiversity loss may turn out to be a sleeper issue of the century. It is caused by many individual but interacting factors: habitat loss, climate change, intensive pesticide use, industrial pollution that suppress both bird and insect populations. But the overall driver is what an ecologist might call the competitive displacement of non-human life by the human growth enterprise. And that's kind of what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, is that we believe that we just have an unlimited growth, the ability to have unlimited growth, more growth in business, more consumption, and we'll just keep on doing this forever. And as Craig mentioned, I think it's something like if everyone in the world, which is over 7 billion people, live like Americans, people in the U.S., we would need 3.5 planets in order to sustain that life. We cannot continue down this path. It is not sustainable. So humans, cattle, pigs, and sheep are supplanting all of these natural species. So, Randy, were you talking to various people in Germany about, I mean, one thing you talked about were insects, but were there other interesting things that you would like to talk to us about too? But what about the insects?
Well, the insects came to my attention through my father-in-law, and I noticed there were not any screens on the windows. And I said, so, no screens? And he said, we don't have to worry about screens. There's no bugs in Germany anymore. My father-in-law is 83 years old, and he's always had his attention on the environment. He's very attentive to the environment. And I asked him about that, and he said, yes, Germany with chemical agriculture, Germany is under a lot of chemical agriculture. And he said the insects have just been killed off. And then I started noticing when we'd go to farms, there are especially biodynamic farms, organic farms, they would have these setups. We called them bug hotels, where they have various materials of plants, stocks, wood, brick, to attract bugs, to propagate bugs, because it's such a critical, crucial situation. They plant, there's always a section in the garden where there's a native plants and flowers that attract bugs. It's a huge problem in Germany with their agriculture and horticulture at this point, because insects are so important. And they're, and as Pamela said, the bug populations in Germany have been depleted over 75% in the last three decades.
And going back to this article, the author says, why does any of this matter, even to those who really don't give a damn about nature per se, apart from the moral stain associated with extinguishing thousands of other life forms? There are purely selfish reasons to be concerned. For example, depending on the climate zone, 78% to 94% of flowering plants, including many human food species, are pollinated by insects, birds, and even bats. And all of these are in danger. And then he continues asking with the question, which raises questions even more than mere academic interest. Why are we not collectively terrified or at least alarmed about the collapse of these various ecosystems? So do we want to talk a little bit about that? I mean, it doesn't seem like, do you think we as a population are alarmed?
No, I don't think so. There's certainly nothing at all about it on television. And here on radio, we're getting a little bit of information out. There needs to be a whole lot more of that information gotten out to the general public, because the general public is just not aware that these issues are really critical. It's just like passed over.
And our back to the basic fact that we are a product of our biosphere. And our biosphere is like a working mechanism that has certain requirements, just like moisture evaporates and turns into clouds and then drifts out and turns into rain, and plants and everything needs rain. It's all a complex built system that requires this complex interaction of components. And again, scientists can pinpoint exactly how our biosphere is coming undone. Due to one of the main parts is an off balance of CO2, which we're creating by burning fossil fuels and deforesting the trees that create oxygen and convert CO2 into oxygen. So like 90% of the indigenous forests of the U.S. are gone at this point. And globally, it's going away fast. So our system, our biosphere, is just being turned upside down.
It truly is. And once again, this is all interconnected, because in order to have to satisfy this huge meat consumption, especially beef consumption, there's chicken consumption, hog consumption, but the Amazon rainforests are being cut down to grow cattle for cheap burgers at McDonald's and or to grow feed for cattle. And cattle is an industry that contributes a major, major contributor to climate change. So the deforestation, the cattle, the methane releases, the CO2 releases, it's all connected. And I do want to talk about big ag. There is something else. I want to see what you think about this. I had almost forgotten about this. In this article about who are the deniers, and the author, Dr. James Gordon, when he said about older white conservative men, twice as many men as women. But he goes on to say that there's a Harvard psychologist, Daniel Gilbert, and others have pointed out that the human brain has evolved over millions of years to meet or avoid immediate rather than long-term threats. We are primed to fight a human intruder now, not a natural disaster in some indefinite future. Our brain facilitates anger when we are insulted by another person, but insulates us from taking a distant destruction personally. And it seems as though that is part of the problem. If I believe that all of this happening with our climate is not affecting me now, I mean, that's a pretty selfish, egoistic, narcissistic position, but that's not affecting me. That's not going to happen, or it's not going to happen way off in the future. And by then, you know, we'll figure all this out, right? So that is curious. I mean, do you think that that is part of the problem? I mean, I've heard people say, you know, technology will save us. And I think I've mentioned this on a show before. I had a student say, you know, we're going to travel to Mars. This is exciting. You know, we can't do any more on this planet. We'll just go to another planet and kind of circle that in our spaceships, you know, and eat pellets now that we are destroying and the systems are collapsing on Earth. So, Randy and Craig, I mean, do you think, I mean, from your knowledge and observation that that if it's not right in your face threat, that we are less concerned, that it's difficult to wrap our minds around something that in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years could be happening? But right now there are these, what about Puerto Rico? What about Fiji? What about these islands that are just
Going underwater,
and the heat waves that we're experiencing, and people dying from heat waves, but the connection I'm not sure is being made to climate change.
Well, I think that once again, it's climate change is something that people don't really want to look at because they think it's just too big of a thing to deal with, and possibly it is. But you know, if you were in your car and you had all your family in a car, and somebody some drunk come staggering up to the car and said, hey, you only have one lug nut on your tire. Would you get out and look at it? Well, you probably would. But in this case, every science on the planet, every scientist, professional climatologist on the planet is telling us our planet is coming undone.
Yes.
But the majority of the people do not have, including my congressman and my president, do not have time to educate themselves to go out there and take the small amount of time to go to the NASA website and view what is taking place to our planet.
Well, they're also, and I think that's really true. However, this administration is also actively removing any information about climate change from their website. In fact, I was listening to someone say that if you're going to apply for a federal grant and you mention climate change in your grant, there's no way you're going to get funding for it. So they are purposely, you know, ignoring that and appointing people for these cabinet members, I mean, cabinet positions and agencies that don't believe in climate change, that don't believe in science. This is the I was in line at a store a while back, and the checker was talking about, isn't it great Trump is president? You know, he's going to do so much good for us. And I was listening, and I thought, you know, am I just going to keep my mouth shut and just get my groceries and leave, my organic vegetables, and get the heck out of there? And so when I finally got up to him, I said, do you know that the cabinet that is being appointed by Trump at this time is the richest cabinet in the history of the U.S.? And he goes, well, I don't know about that. So what that means to me is all these corporate interests. I mean, how much money do these people need? You know, that you have people that are appointed to agencies that want to dismantle the agency itself, that have sued the EPA, I don't know, tens of dozens of times before they became leader of that post. And so this is not good. This is not good when we have a president and an administration that is denying this, sends coal and oil representatives to the climate conference to say, hey, what about us? You know, what about us? And also in this article that was written about who deniers are, that one that he believes, and I wonder if this is true, the more that people can empathize, let's say with a person in Puerto Rico, a person in Fiji, and not just a person, but people that are at the brunt of these disasters, that if I can see that's happening to them, maybe I can understand that could happen to me too. And I need to take action. I don't know. You know, whether that's going to help or not. But I think in the little time that we have left, I do want to say one thing about Big Ag. And, well, I want to say a couple of things about Big Ag. I'm going to just run down this list about Big Ag. And I'm saying this is what we know if you're paying attention. Big Ag is a leading cause of climate change. Big Ag causes dead zones in the ocean. Big Ag uses a tremendous amount of fossil fuels. The fossil fuel industry and the agricultural industry, conventional agriculture, are tied, as is the war machine and fossil fuels. Big Ag uses antibiotics in meat production, herbicides and pesticides in food production. Factory farms, the raising of animals for slaughter, exhaust the fields and needs to keep using other spaces. Rainforests are cut down. Factory farms cause animals to suffer greatly. Lobbyists push for more meat in the diet, which is unhealthy, especially processed meat. People are being appointed to, as I had mentioned, to offices and agencies that are wanting to deregulate and let corporations do as they choose. Now, we could all become vegan, but that's not highly likely. But I do want to let the audience know that there was an article. It's called Tyson Foods Linked to Largest Toxic Dead Zone in U.S. History. And it says America's largest meat producer must clean up its act and incentivize improvements in livestock feed production. So this goes back to that nitrogen-phosphorus cycle, that a lot of nitrogen is put into the soil and herbicides as well and pesticides for the food that they're growing for cattle and other farm animals. And this is going into to the water systems, into the aquifers, and going into the ocean and killing the oxygen supply, and algae is growing, and dead zones happen. So that is not good. Now, if people want to eat meat, and I assume that all of us here are meat eaters one way or another, I'm really trying to reduce the amount I eat. I also do not buy conventional meat. I want to, if I do buy meat, it's from organically, sustainably, that's what it says anyway, raised places. What do you think about our diets? I mean, the suggestion is that we eat more plant-based foods. It's healthier for us. We reduce our meat consumption. We are trying to get people around the world to eat more meat, and that is adding to the problem. So do you want to say anything about our diets or not? It's a difficult situation.
Well, I think that for me personally, I'm getting increasingly skeptical of where I get my food.
Yes.
Because you look at salmon, and you think, oh, here's some salmon, but you look at it, no, it's farm salmon. It's highly medicated with antibiotics.
Yes.
They even dye it to make it look like salmon.
Yes.
They have chickens now. Most of the chickens in the market you go to, they're like a genetically bred up chicken that'll grow within a short amount of time to a huge breast. We don't know what that means to us in our bodies over long term. The food system is getting increasingly deceptive.
Yes.
and totally strategized to make more and more money, more and more profit at the expense of what the public is getting out of it.
Yes, and there's the health for us, and then there's the suffering component of the animal. And as you mentioned, you know, pumping a chickens full of antibiotics and other whatever growth hormones, they, from what I understand, they become so large, their breasts are so large that they fall over or they break a leg. They're not built to withstand that kind of weight. And now, because of 9/11 and written into surveillance and protection and security, you're not allowed to go into factory farms. You cannot fly a drone over a factory farm and take a picture. It's incredible. And so we only know certain abuses by people who sneak in. Mm-hmm. And
then they're prosecuted,
and
too.
And they are prosecuted. They don't want whistleblowers. They want it to continue business as usual and do what they do. And so we only have a few minutes left, and I made a list here because, I said, you know, what are some changes that we could make? You know, we could eat less meat. Mm-hmm. And I think Randy is really right that we really should look at where our food comes from. I know Randy and his wife have a wonderful garden We have a garden. Some of us go to farmers markets. We really take a look at where our food comes from. You could become a citizen rather than a consumer. I want to be a citizen. I don't want to be seen as a consumer. We can phase out quickly fossil fuels and coal, reduce CO2 emissions. And then there's climate change education, you know, help with climate change education. And I put here the media need to be uncorporate. Mm-hmm. Instead of the corporate media with their agendas of pushing corporations' perspectives, we need to get truthful and useful information. Mm-hmm. We could have fewer children. Is there anything wrong with that, being aware?
It makes sense to try to start going in that direction. And it's a slow process, just like quitting cigarettes was a slow process for a lot of people. The idea that we all have to have all the children we want is very destructive because there are so many of us already. We need to go the other direction, and we need to educate and work in that direction. And I'm not against children. It's just that we have a lot of folks on this planet.
We certainly do. Randy, do you have any final thoughts that you would like to leave us with?
Well, I would just hope that I think the best overall thing that we can do is to educate ourselves, and the information, real information, is there. In a computer, you can Google climate change. You can go to the NASA website. You can go to the NOAA website. And all this information is not complicated. It's written down there. You can check it. You can take the information. If you distrust it, you can cross-check that information through universities and university studies. There's ways to confirm whether information is correct or not. And I think, you know, I mean, that's the only thing that will save us is people getting real information. And we have the capabilities and capacity now to network and make the needed changes we can.
Yes, yes. And I want to remind our listeners that this is KKRN, a community and listener-supported radio. We are all volunteers at KKRN 88.5. And you have been listening to Environmental Watch with host Pamela Spoto and Craig Boyer and Randy Compton. We're all participating in a roundtable discussion about top environmental issues. And next week, if you tune in, I hope you will, we will have Dig This Trump Watch with host Professor Parker Pollack. I would like to read an announcement about North State Giving Tuesday, and it is a 14-hour online giving campaign for the benefit of more than 120 registered nonprofits in Shasta and Siskiyou counties. Giving Tuesday takes place on November 28th. KKRN is one of the nonprofits. New this year, you can schedule your donations in advance at northstategives.org today through November 27th. Most major credit cards and e-checks are accepted. Your donations will go further thanks to an incentive pool made possible by the Nodell Family Endowment Fund of the Shasta Regional Community Foundation. Don't forget, you can give to listener-supported KKRN Community Radio at northstategives.org by scheduling a donation today or on November 28th. And Craig just handed me something. What is it that you just handed me? Oh, it's a guest columnist. It's Parker Pollack.
And we'll be having him next week on Trump Watch, and he wrote a wonderful article.
And this was in the Reading Record Searchlight?
Yes, a few days ago.
Well, good, good. We're getting the word out.
Yay.
I mean, in terms of educating about real issues and what is happening. So thank you very much, all of you in the studio and our listening audience, and bye for now.